Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Kenya. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from PrideOfDetroit.com. Eric, I don't know what else there is to say. Lions trounced the Jaguars 52-6 last Sunday at Ford Field. Traveled to Indianapolis this upcoming Sunday. We'll be talking about that in a few minutes, but they're really firing on all cylinders. 9-1. Three straight 9-win seasons in a row, which is, you know, unheard of in our lifetimes, and winning records
before Thanksgiving, like they're right. Guaranteed a winning record at this point. Just stats on top of stats. It's remarkable stuff. I tried putting in just the records that they into an article. I like kind of like a, as a preview to one of my articles, I tried putting in just the records that they broke this week, and I could not fit them all in because it was starting to get egregious. Like, it's awfully impressive. Statistical stat, you know, offensive statistics galore, everything from the running backs doing remarkable things, St. Brown's touchdown streak, the running backs touchdown streaks, Jared Goff and his ridiculousness. It's a lot of fun. It was fun to watch in person, even though it was one of those games where I could see people maybe fading out because they
wandering
just
out of the stadium.
They couldn't do they couldn't do anything wrong. It was just everything worked. They looked like the better, like they came in and they did what they do. They snatch your soul right off the bat, and then you look helpless from then on out. It's a third game of the season where they've won by 35 points or more. Do you know how many teams have NFL teams have won by 35 this year other than Detroit?
Well, I won't leave it. One other time.
No, it's zero. It's zero. Okay. Right. Yeah, they've done it. Lions have done it three times. Starting to get the thing that's really starting to catch me off guard, I think. It's not the winning. Like, the winning is expected. Like, I've watched this team grow and develop. I've watched how they execute, and when they're on their when they're on point, they can't be stopped. And the thing that's catching me is when they're starting to compare this team to not just other teams in the league, but they're starting to compare teams historically. Like, from a DVOA perspective, they're having
there's
the
some
third...
concerning notes about that. The okay. teams they compare well to, like the 2007 Patriots, like, well, they right. won every game, but they didn't win the Super Bowl. And there were
the other
keep
one.
Going.
The other ones,
let's keep going. I don't want to derail you too much. No,
okay, but so like with DVOA, they're the third. They're having the third best DVOA like season of all time.
Yep.
Patriots was number two. The 2007 Patriots was number two. Remember, that team was the Moss Brady yep. connection mm-hmm. where they scored like 36 points a game or something like that. But the other team's a 91 Washington team. You know what I mean?
Which like, won that the was, Super Bowl.
Yeah, and that team was
stomped
amazing.
On the Lions twice on the way to getting there.
They did. And we've talked about that. Like, when the Lions faced, you know, that was a good Lions team that went into the playoffs, and then that Washington team was just a buzzsaw. Like, there's just, they arguably, according to DVOA, they were the most efficient team of all time. And so, to be in that
there's
breath.
Parallels to this Lions team.
Mm-hmm. It's to be into that, to be spoken in the same breath as the 2007 Patriots and then that 91 Washington team is it's definitely catching me off guard because it's that. Do you remember watching that Patriots team? I'm like, I remember it vividly.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, no one could even touch them until the Super Bowl.
But the Giants did have them on the ropes in week 17 as well. It's like they learned something mm-hmm. from that game. Because didn't they lose that one like 28-24? It was a close mm-hmm. game. And then, yeah, of course, they quote-unquote figure out how to win. I don't know. Sometimes I just think, like, it's just the right day. It's just your day. You're just going to win that day. Yeah, and then, yeah, maybe they do figure things out. Mm-hmm. They had a great defensive line and were able to put pressure on Brady, and you know, regardless of how great he is, if you make it difficult on him, it's going to be difficult for any team to win in that situation. But
And so certainly that I think that's a good lesson for Lions fans to maybe keep the expectations in check a little bit, but at the same time,
No.
there's a lot of parallels. There's a lot of parallels that say this you could have that type of season because when they click, they click. And when they don't click, they still win. And so it's a
That's
lot of
the big
fun.
one.
Yeah.
You know, they were in no danger of losing on Sunday, like right from the get-go.
No,
Like it's like,
no.
well, this one's over pretty quick. And the other thing about, you know, being a Lions fan, because you see some people, it's like, well, like you said, I was able to check out and go do something else. And everybody's different. But for me, it's like, I got to watch this. This may never happen again. This has
Right.
never happened before. You know,
Yeah.
like they're rolling over teams. So you want to drink in every last minute of this because we don't know how long it's going to last.
Yeah, for sure. And like it, you know, the way that they're built, it looks sustainable.
Yeah, well, yeah, it
But
looks really good, but being
yeah.
on this much of a roll right
And
now,
this,
like
yeah, and this mindset and this attitude and this demeanor and the right pieces being there. And I mean, they're losing key players and just rolling
yeah,
without
that's a concern.
but they're still rolling. You know, like that's the thing
Right?
is it's awfully impressive to watch them. I know we probably don't need to talk much about the Jaguars. I mean, look, Kirby got another interception, so he's in the lead in it for interceptions in the NFL, right? That's a good attaboy. Brian Branch had one of the biggest hits I've ever seen on Ingram trying to right in that second series where he hit him clean in the chest and then knocked him back like 5 yards. Like it's remarkable. It's just remarkable all around. Like we talk about the offense, and the offense is easy because it's statistics and it's easy stuff to understand, and they're dominating people right now. But the defense is what they're doing is something that I didn't think they were capable of, right? Like we
Right.
talked, okay, if this can be a top half defense, they're going to be good.
Yeah,
If this is a top 10
they get to be
defense, they
number
got
14. Yeah,
yeah.
indeed. Yeah, if
And if
they're
we're
top 10, they're going to be real
Super
good, and
Bowl.
that's like their
Yeah.
third.
Right. No, well, they're even better now.
Yeah,
So
they're second now. Yeah.
second now, it's their that their ability to do what they're doing on defense is, I think, really what makes this such an impressive season to watch for me because the offense has been good. We've seen this for a couple of years, but man, this defense is really just kind of putting it all together, and it's a lot of fun. A lot of fun.
All right, let's dig into the transactions first and the sad part. Alex Anzalone moved to IR. He broke his, what is his wrist or his forearm?
Look like his forearm to me.
Okay, so we don't know still exactly. I think it's the forearm too, but I heard wrist somewhere and.
They when they announced his injury designation, they announced it as forearm.
Okay,
So,
that's that.
yeah.
Tells that. Yeah.
So,
Did you
yeah, you know,
what?
they.
Yeah, he's done for the year probably. I don't that with all these guys, they're like, I'm going to return for the Marcus Davenport. I'll be back for the Super Bowl. Aiden Hutchinson, it's looming back there. I'll be back for the Super Bowl. Alex Anzalone, I'll be back for the Super Bowl. I don't know how certain that is for any of
I
those
do
guys.
think
Hopefully, the Lions get there, but we'll see.
I do think there's a shot Alex has a chance to return because with just a straight break, it's just a matter of how fast it heals because it's different with Aiden. Like on a leg, you're walking on your leg. You know what I mean? It needs to be a lot more stable than your arm. But 6 to 8 weeks is the prognosis. If it's 6 weeks, then that puts him right at the end of the season, like right at week 18 coming back type of thing. If it's 8 weeks, then you're talking about NFC Championship type of thing, or maybe divisional round as possibility. So I do think Alex has a chance, but I don't know. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, of all of the guys like the Davenports and the Hutchinsons and the Barnes, I think Anzalone has the greatest chance of actually returning. But we'll see. We'll see how fast he heals.
Safety. Ify Melifonwu activated from the injured reserve with his ankle injury, then immediately placed back on injured reserve, finger injury.
Yeah, we talked about this at the end of last week where he injured his finger while rehabbing from his ankle and in, being in that injury window. And we talked about how bad that's just bad luck. And, you know, if he doesn't, you know, we were saying hopefully it's nothing, like it's just something that's easy to recover from, but turns out it's not. It's more long term. And so it is, they had to, they probably activated him earlier than they wanted to with the ankle. But they did that so that they could start the four game
clock
wait, yeah, that he has to wait on. So he's gonna be out this game plus three more, and then he'll have
There'd
a
be
chance
three
for
games
the
left in the regular season if he were to come back at the end of these 4 weeks.
And so he'll go through an injury window again, and there's a chance he could return at the end of the season. Now with Ify, I do think there's a legitimate chance that he comes back because they could have just said, we're just going to leave you on IR and that'll be the end of you and your season's over. But the fact that they went through the, you know, they jumped through the hoops to activate him and then let him sit on the roster for a day and then re-IR him, like they go through those hoops probably because they think he has a legitimate chance to return. And so I do think he'll come back. How much of an impact? I don't know. It's really hard to say, you know, because he hasn't played any regular season snaps, and he'll be coming back right in the last couple, like you said, last couple weeks of the season. So hopeful, but it's just the health has just really impeded him this year.
All right, so let's talk a little deeper on this one. Let's give the listeners a tiny bit of value here. This is his fourth year, right?
Yeah.
His contract's up after this season. Now, if the Lions keep playing the way they are, even if they don't, even if things taper off, they're going to have a lot in the next few years. They're going to have a lot of players that are going to become expensive, and you're going to be so that, and not all, we're not going to be right now. They've been keeping all of them, but that's not guaranteed for the future.
Correct.
Is Melifonwu now with these injury concerns, is he a guy more likely to come back because he's going to be less expensive and he's part of the system, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I do think with like him and Barnes, the injuries, the timeliness of the injuries and the length of the injuries are certainly detrimental to their pocketbooks and it will be friendly to the team. And so I do think it will help the Lions get him at a relatively cheaper price than what you would have expected. The thing though that I'm expecting is I'm not expecting like a multi-year deal because one, the player is
Injury
going to want to,
concerns.
well, injury concerns is for the team. And then for the player, they're going to want to prove themselves.
Right.
And so they're not going to want to be tied down to a lower level contract. And so I do think if he, on a single year contract with a low base salary, and then like, you know, you can earn paychecks for games played. That's an easy contract to make because it's a not because it won't be a likely to be earned salary. It won't count against the existing cap. It'll go into the following year's cap. Yeah, it's an easy deal to kind of part. You can see it happening. With Barnes, it's a little bit more complicated, I think. But again, it's just the injury hits him at the wrong time, and so the Lions are going to know him a lot better. And I think with both guys, the Lions are going to know their injury history. They're going to know what their value is. They're going to put a price on that value, and they're really not going to budge from it. And that's what they've done in the past. I expect them to do that again, and I do expect it to be a lower number than it would have been if they would have played all year.
Broderick Martin activated the 53-man roster. Lions get richer in defensive tackles.
Yeah, he's still raw, but he's very talented. There's really just the only thing that's really holding him back is his pad level. He's real, you know, at 6'5", it's tough to keep those pad level low, but he's got a ton of talent. He's got a really good mentor in front of him in DJ Reader. and he can give you a real boost to the depth part of the defensive line, which really could pay benefits down the stretch, especially if he can impact make an impact in run defense, which is really what they're gonna need him to do. So I'm not sure how quick they'll throw him back into the fire this week, but I do expect him to start getting practice now because I think all eyes are on the playoffs. And so you with Broderick, you're going to try and use these last 8 games to, or 7 games to, mold him, get him work, try and develop him a little bit more so that when the playoffs come, he's playing at a higher level than he is right now. Not going to rush it, not going to put him in spots that he doesn't need to be in, but they're going to work on developing him as opposed to having him like a key part of their game plan, I'd say.
Interesting, this last transaction, linebacker David Long signed to the practice squad. He came from the Dolphins, but
Yeah.
probably more known from the Titans for most of his career, although with the Dolphins last year. Interesting signing. This is a reaction to the Anzalone injury.
Yeah, they only had they have 5 linebackers on their active roster, and they had 1 player on the practice squad, and then they Long gives them now a second linebacker on the practice squad. They use 6 linebackers every week, and so they needed another body because just having Boplin available as linebacker 6, you can only give him an elevation so
Elevate
many
them.
times, right? 3 more times and then you're out. So they needed another guy. Was a highly coveted player just a couple years ago. Was supreme run defender, led the league in run defense from a linebacker standpoint. Not last year, but the year before, I believe. Maybe might even been last year. I'm trying to remember. But he hasn't played as well this year. And I think it really was just a matter of he didn't fit the scheme. And so he'll come to Lions here. He'll probably spend a couple of weeks learning the scheme, learning what to do. And then he's a highly talented player, especially in run defense. And that's important to the Lions. And I do wonder if they don't get, some linebackers back healthy, if he's a guy who could play a key role for them down the stretch as well. Again, it's a talented player that you picked off the waiver wire for nothing, and add him to the practice squad, so you're barely paying him anything. Low risk, high reward activation, and he's a guy that it's these types of guys, these types of signings, they tend to work out, and if they don't, it's no harm, no foul. They'll just keep moving on, but real chance to for him to be a low key strong signing here late in the or mid, at the midpoint of the year, which is a bit unusual to find a player of his talent level.
Where does he fit for the line? Is he a will linebacker?
Yeah, I think he
So
would be a
same as
will,
Anzalone.
but I think he could play this. I think he could play the Sam too. Like they've shifted the Sam usage, right? Like they were
Right.
with Derek Barnes. They were putting that Sam at the line of scrimmage. Derek Barnes get hurt. Now they're shifting the Sam between the line of scrimmage and then off the ball. When Nowoski's on the field, he's usually at the line of scrimmage. When Neiman is on the field, or what was Rodriguez, they were usually off the ball. He would be more of like an off the ball Sam, or an off the ball Will, and then maybe you could shift if you want to shift Rodriguez over to Sam. It doesn't either way. It's an outside linebacker who you can play off the ball, and you're going to use as like a run defender. And but yeah, Will makes a lot of sense, and the way the Lions use their third linebacker spot, there's that Sam spot potential for him to fit in there too.
He's an interesting signing because, he doesn't have to. It's weird they're getting the. It's not weird because they're good. They're able to get these better players because it's a good team now. It's not like they're wallowing around and it's hard to
Right.
get like players like this to come in. If they get him to play to his strengths, which Glenn has been able to do this year, he might be really valuable for the team.
Yeah,
That is a
certainly.
very interesting signing.
Yeah. Very high ceiling here. Like, there's It's all positive. All positive for sure.
All right, injured list. Wednesday walkthrough, Thursday full practice. So here's how it breaks down. Tight end Sam Laporta, shoulder injury. He would be estimated as full on Wednesday, and he was in full practice Thursday.
Yeah, looks like he's in a good spot. He should be ready to play again this weekend. And interestingly enough, I've had a lot of people ask me, are they rushing him back too soon? Is it worth playing him? Again, with the everything that the Lions are doing right now is focused on the postseason. So any of these decisions, especially with injuries like long term, they're focused on the postseason. If Laporta wasn't ready, there's no way they would risk bringing him back a week early. Like, I actually think he probably, there was a possibility he could have even played last week, but that was them saying, no, we're not going to rush him. We're just going to let him take it easy and let him get back. But now that they're putting him back in full practices, they're only going to do that if he's ready, because they're not going to risk the future. They're not going to start bringing guys back from injury to win now. They have enough talent to win now without these injured guys. You bring them back when they're ready, you slowly work them back in, and then you get them, your focus is, like I said, seven and 8 weeks from now.
Tight end Shane Zylstra, neck injury, estimated to have been full on Wednesday, full practice Thursday. One of the nine Lions catch passes last Sunday.
He got injured very late in the game, and he was actually in the press box. His injury was being announced in the same breath as the game being called, like being over. They had two injuries very late in the game. One of them was, excuse me, one of them was Zylstra. One of them was Allen Robinson. Allen Robinson was pulled for a concussion test, and they were so late in the game that, like, the press box announcer was like, Shane Zylstra is questionable to return with a neck injury. Allen Robinson is being evaluated for a concussion, and the game is over. And it was like all in one breath. Like, that's how late they were. But obviously not a major concern, because they put him in full practices. So it's not uncommon for a player who does get injured in the game to be on the injury report the following week. And that was very much the case with Allen Robinson. He was on the injury report for a day because apparently he did pass his concussion protocols at the game, and but they still have to formally put him on the injury report for monitoring for Wednesday's practice, and then they were able to remove him on Thursday because he didn't show any signs and he's passed his test, and so he doesn't need to be on the injury report anymore. With Shane, everything looks positive as well.
Cornerback Terrion Arnold, groin injury, not on injury report Wednesday, limited on Thursday.
So it's the third week in a row that they've had a player injured on Thursday, and Decker, and then Carlton, and now Terrion. Midweek injuries are always worrisome, right? Decker ended up missing the game against Houston. Carlton ended up getting a wrap and then playing through it, although they took him out at halftime because they were like, yeah, there's no need to risk you, because we're up 28 to 6 or 3 or whatever it was. And so they took it slow with him. With Terrion, another midweek injury. Groins are a little bit more suspect than a broken finger or a broken thumb in Carlton's case. So yes, I'm a little bit more worried about a groin injury that happens on Thursday than a thumb. At the same time, he was let loose in the locker room, and he was chatting away with everybody, all the reporters, and he looked like he was okay. So typically, if a player's injured, you don't see him in a locker room. That was the case with Carlton. That was the case with Decker. They were injured, you don't see him in a locker room the next day. And that usually means, okay, something's going on. With the fact that they let Terrion back in the locker room and he was able to talk to reporters without someone, like, cautioning him, is really, I think, a good sign. They wouldn't do that if they were like, if it was something serious. So could he miss the game? Sure. Will he? I don't know. And I think their actions with him point to maybe him being okay, but we'll have to see.
Cornerback Carlton Davis, you mentioned him a few times already. Hand injury, estimated full practice Wednesday, Thursday. You know what the kids are missing out on with Carlton Davis? The club. He didn't have the giant, the giant wrapped cast that would make his hand look just, I mean, his hand did look gigantic on Sunday, but it was like a big, in the big glove. It looked like an old Looney Tunes cartoon, where like somebody had blown up their glove and made their hand gigantic. But like it used to be the big solid club, which was great.
Yeah, they isolated his thumb, and then I believe maybe the forefinger was probably might have been isolated as well. In the locker, I talked to him in the locker room after, and he was not wearing a club. He had already taken it off, and he just had some tape basically hole around his thumb itself, and wasn't wearing like a restrictive brace on it post game. And so I think that's a good sign as well, because I know when I broke my finger, the way that I broke mine, I had to wear a brace on mine, and I had a longer recovery time. Mine was like 8 weeks or something like that, right? Might even been longer, 12 weeks. But with Carlton, he didn't seem to have a lot of the restrictions, so it's possible that he's in a better spot. The fact that they're allowing him to play with this little half club is a good sign as well. And the way that they're only manipulating like half of his hand instead of the full hand, I think is also a pretty good sign that they feel like they can protect it, and he can still keep a little bit of his hand mobility. The positive thing here, or the I'm sorry, the reason he's on the depth chart or the injury report here is because he's still injured, right? And even though he's going to practice in full, and even though he's probably going to play in the game, he's probably going to be on the injury report for the next, maybe 6 weeks, 6, 8 weeks, like it could be that long. But so yeah, get used to talking about Carlton like as if he's Frank Ragnow now, in years past.
Cornerback Emmanuel Mosley, pectoral injury and in the evaluation window. Full estimated full practice Wednesday, full practice Thursday.
Yep, so he has one practice left that he's able to do. And then I don't know if he'll get activated. My guess is no. So he'll probably be ruled out after Friday's practice. And then on Tuesday, they'll have to make a decision on what they do with him. And they may not announce it to Wednesday, like they did with Broderick Martin this year. Make a decision on Tuesday, announce it Wednesday. There's also the possibility that they want him to play. And then there'll the and the way we'll know that is if he's not ruled out on Friday, if he's given like a questionable designation. If he has that designation on Friday, there's a chance they pull him off on Saturday and activate him, or they could also downgrade him and rule him out as well. Just but keep an eye on his designation tomorrow. My guess is he'll be ruled out. Possibility that he's not, and if he's not, we might see him this weekend. But if not this weekend, I think next is a real possibility. Makes a lot of sense.
All right. Colts game, we talked Colts game. Jaguars game, we talked about it the bit already. It not
Yeah.
much to be said. 449 in the air, 189 on the ground. I think they had more rushing yards than the Jaguars had total yards. I think Jaguars only were able to muster, what is it? So 34, 41, one no 179. So the Lions outrushed them that way alone. Total annihilation. Jaguars are dead man walking. Doug Peterson's not fired, which, they talked about it a little bit during the game, but it's like, why fire him now? Like, it's not like they're going to rally to the playoffs if they
Sure.
promote one of the coordinators from within, let him play out the string. And Lawrence is hurt and all that. Worked out for the Lions very well, how the Jaguars were set up going into the game.
Yeah, they look like they kind of quit. They stopped their assignments. It was bad.
They just wanted to go home.
I watched a Jaguars post game show like a couple days later, someone sent me a link of the Jaguars post game show, and I put it on just in the background, and it was mesmerizing, the misery that they were going through. They were so irate, and they were to the point where they were basically saying that same thing you were just talking about, which was, why fire him now? If you fire him now, he gets to take his money and go sit on the couch. Make him
Right.
work. Make him finish out the season. They
Right.
are very angry in Jacksonville right now. It's their worst loss in I think franchise history.
Yeah, because the previous worst loss in franchise history was to the Lions.
So before the game, I was talking to Anthony Bellino and Lomas Brown. I was on their show last week, and so I was talking to them ahead of the game, and Anthony and I were talking about the score, and I was like, yeah, this is probably the worst. This game has the potential to be like that 95 game. And then Anthony goes, Lomas would have been on that team. And I was like, oh, Lomas, do you remember that Jaguars game? And he was like, oh, we beat the pants off of them. I was like, and he had a lot of fun stuff to say about that game. He was very very excited to talk about it. And then look at what happens. They kind of replicate it. So yeah, I mean, I don't know what else to say about it. Like, we witnessed it. We've seen it. The hype is unbelievable. Chiefs lose, and so the Lions are
Right.
number
Slot,
one
yeah.
in everyone's power rankings. They're the odds on favorites to win the Super
Oh,
Bowl
you
now.
brought
And
it
if
up.
you're,
I should have. I should. Well, I guess we have to. It's part of the show. It feels like a
it's
jinx. First
no.
time in the in the in super in Super Bowl era history that
Yeah,
the Lions are
crazy.
betting favorites to win the Super Bowl at any time of the season or off season.
What's crazy is after they won, the Chiefs still hadn't played, and the Lions shifted to the favorites. And Jeremy was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna write an article on it. And then the Chiefs started playing and they started winning, and then the odds shifted right back. And the Chiefs were the favorites again. And so he kind of like he waited on it. When the Chiefs lost, then the Lions became the favorites, and he published his article. But it was you could see it teetering. Like, you could just watch you were what we were watching the bet line just kind of shift back and forth between yeah, I'm not scared of it. I'm not worried about jinxing it. Everybody's talking about it, and so it's very surreal, but at the same time, everything we talked about at the top is why, right? Like, all the positives, all the confidence, all those records that they're doing, like, they look like a team that is headed in that direction, and so they're being acknowledged they're being acknowledged in that way nationally, and I think it's well deserved.
Still lack a pass rush a little bit. Za'Darius Smith did get himself a sack, or at least half a sack, as the game wound down. I don't know how much. The thing is, we've talked about that to death. Like, everybody kind of knows the score with that. It's like, well, we traded for Za'Darius Smith, not a bad pickup, but it's still going to be piecing it to co try to cobble together a pass rush, and hasn't been super successful, but hasn't been really that necessary.
I think all valid facts. If they have a weakness, that seems to be it. When you lose so many guys, that comes with the territory
Right.
there.
Well,
So, yeah, the
and
nice
we
thing.
probably—I don't know about the pass rush we're going to see this upcoming Sunday, because isn't a lot of it going to be predicated on how they kind of how they dealt with Kyler Murray? And I guess we're going to be talking about that soon, where they're going to just kind of keep him in the pocket and, kind of force him to throw.
Well, the we'll get into that a little bit more, because
Okay. All right.
the Colts
I might.
will they do stuff to specifically get him out of the pocket purposefully. So they try and make him so that he's not a guy that you can just blitz and tee off on. So it is a little unusual, but Yeah, I think a lot of the same concepts that we saw against the Cardinals, you'll see again.
Let's talk about the Colts. Lions favored by 7.5. 7.5 point favorite on the road. 1 p.m. on Sunday, things are back to normal. There are two straight games, two straight 1 o'clock games on Sunday. Fox back on Fox. Kenny Albert, Jonathan Vilma, Megan O'Leary on the field. Not the top crew. This couple weeks now with not the top crew. It's like, oh, it's throwback Lions these last 2 weeks, right? Referee is going to be Sean Hockley, you once dressed as his father for Halloween. 11th season in the NFL, 7th season as a referee, averages 13.44 penalties per game, and that's just almost one penalty above NFL average.
Did I send you the picture of Georgia? I dug that outfit out and I dressed Georgia up as Ed Hockley.
Georgia?
I just threw Georgie
Really?
the outfit on her just to see how it would look.
Gotta be gigantic on her.
It was gigantic, so
Okay, all right. That's why I didn't be sure.
I ended up taking the muscles off and just putting like the referee outfit on her, and
Yeah.
she had a ball. She ran around it for a day wearing Ed Hockley's old outfit. but yeah, Sean. I mean, Sean's average. He's pretty right down the line. I didn't realize he's been in the league that long, but I guess I probably should have, right? Because his dad's
Yeah,
been in it that long.
that he's been around. It feels like he's been around for a long time, only because of
Yeah.
the nepotism of it all. Like you see,
Right.
like another Hockley.
Did you see when he did the game in Germany? I don't know if you got up and
He
watched
did the
that game
first
when.
penalty in German.
Right. Yep. Slick. Little slick move there. Did you see?
Was he hoping it was that penalty? Like how many German words for the
Oh,
penalties did he know? Or did he
it's
get lucky? Or
it
did they
might
call
have
it on purpose? Was it
called it
like a
on purpose.
conspiracy? Or it's like, we have to call this penalty because it's the one word I know in German. It's the one penalty I know in German.
It's a great question. Did you know that his dad did the same thing when they did a game in Mexico City? He did, I think it was
Oh,
Mexico
boy, he did it
City,
in
he did the game in,
Spanish.
and he did one penalty in Spanish as
It'd
well.
be more interesting if he did it in German in Mexico City.
How that would have been well received.
Yeah, I think Emperor Maximilian, right? He was German, but that's for a different podcast. That's like an 1800s ruler of Mexico. Once again, that's for a different podcast, not for a Lions podcast. Maybe he wasn't. I don't know. I don't
I'll
think
go.
anyone's going to fact check me on that
Listen,
one.
I'm not fact checking you on it. I'm going to go with I assume you know it. At this point in our relationship, if you tell me something, I assume it's right.
Oh, well, now I'm going to come up with all sorts of crazy scenarios.
Colts are 5-6. I
That
think.
was an awkward transition. Yeah, Colts are five and
Sorry.
six. No, that's my fault. I should have been
No,
forced
this
to
is mine.
say something after you.
I was thinking, I'm gonna say they beat the Jets, but did you watch that game? I don't. I
I
mean,
did
like I
not
watched.
watch any of that game.
Okay, I watched the condensed game, so I didn't get, just as part of my rewatch. I started to watch a couple other ones, but what I noticed from some of my reading is that they really made some shifts, right? This Colts team, what they started the season with, is not the same Colts team that they are coming into this Lions game. They changed their defense, I think, after week four, and then they changed their offense twice because they had to switch to Flacco, and then they had to switch back from Flacco to Richardson again. And this second time around, they've kind of altered their offense again. And so it's almost like their third edition of their offense, and like I said, the defense they changed earlier in the season, but I didn't feel like I learned much about the earlier game because I don't know how much of that's going to actually like carry over. So like when I'm looking at all these stats that I look at for like season long stats to give you a perspective on what the team is doing, I don't know how well they paint a picture of what this team actually is.
Right.
So it's an unusual stat line. Like if you look at their stats,
They have
like when you
crazy scores of games. This team has lost to the Jaguars, but then
Yes.
also only lost to Houston in Houston by 3 point. Like,
Right.
barely lost to or beat the Steelers. Like, they have some wins. They have some
Yeah.
nice wins. Then they got some bad losses.
It's a very
Interesting.
strange, it's a very strange team. They I mean they put up so they I think the Jaguars put up 37 on them or 36, something like that. And when that happened, that's when they redid their defense after that game. They looked at that and said, "Man, we're just getting gashed. We need to change things up." And so
And it
they
really
changed.
improved
Yeah,
numbers wise.
it did. And we'll get into why and what's different. But I tried to keep a lot of my focus on what are they now, as opposed to focusing too heavily on what they
Yeah,
were.
what has happened?
Now there are some things that carry over, but there's also a lot of the things that they've dispatched with, you know, that they don't care about. But like, so a lot of these numbers you look at and you're like, I don't know how you trust a lot of them. At the same time, they're almost all middle of the road, like middle to below average, on almost everything. On offense and defense, it's like everything is just like in the middle or a little bit worse than the middle. They don't rank in the top 10 in much in really anything. They don't rank in the bottom like five in much of anything. And so it's a very kind of middling team. And I think what you pointed out with the scores being kind of helter-skeltery, I think that's a reflection, right? Like some days they're good and some days they're bad. And my overall kind of essence though is that they didn't really have an identity on offense and they may have one now. The problem is that their identity is what they're planning to like lean on. They're not very good at it yet, and the Lions are very good at defending it. And so it's going to be a bit of a problem for them. And then on defense, the two kind of teams where Goff maybe hasn't been like elite, run the same style of defense that the Colts ran early in the season, but now that they've changed it, they've now the to the style of defense they run now, it's more suited to the stuff that Goff does well. So while these changes are positive for the Colts, I also think they play favorably into what the Lions do well. And so I do, that's I part of the reason why I think the Lions are favored by so much. Even though like the Colts have 10 of the 11 games that the Colts have been in have been one score games. The only one that wasn't a one score game was against Buffalo, where Buffalo beat them 30 to 20. Still, you know, pretty close, right? But they've been in close games. So the fact that it's the line is 7.5, a little bit over one score, I think also speaks to the fact that what the Lions are and the Colts are still trying to kind of figure themselves out. Because even if the Colts lose and they're 5-7 coming out of this game,
Their
they don't
favorable
have,
schedule down the
yeah,
stretch.
exactly. They have a favorable schedule and they could easily just sneak in. And they could grab a wild card spot. And so for the Colts, I think this is a tough game for them to win, but it'll be important for them to try and work some things out. And then potentially, if they can, they can potentially go on a little run here down the stretch, maybe put themselves into a spot to get in the postseason.
This Colt, like what you said about the Colts, this has like shades of decent Stafford Lions teams.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it has the feel. This team has the feel like. All right, DVOA wise, Lions are number one and Colts number 22. Offensively, Lions sit at number two, ninth, throwing the ball first at running the ball. Colts defense number 17. Against the pass, number 19 overall, against the run, right in the middle of the pack at 16. Flip it over the other way. Lions defense, number two overall, second against the pass. That's crazy after what they've done the last few years. Against the run, number five, Colts offense, number 23, 19th throwing the ball, 14th running the ball. Special teams line still have the best of the NFL. Colts are at number 8, rather respectable.
So it's from a DVOA standpoint, they're actually a little bit behind Jacksonville, right? But this is again why you kind of can't fully embrace all of these scores because they've changed so much about their team and their scheme. I do think they deserve to be in the middle of the pack, but this is a better offense. This is a better defense than what Jacksonville showed up. So I'm not expecting them to come in and be Jacksonville 2.0 here. Like the circumstances are very different for the Colts than they were Jacksonville, and so I expect them to have a good game plan, try and execute it. Like I said, try and find their identity, but Lions are just. They're a much, much better team. And I think things would have to go horribly wrong for the Lions to not win this game.
Head coach is Shane Steichen, one of the hot coaching hires, not of this past offseason, but the offseason previous. We'll dig in with the Colts offense, which is, although made some changes, they're still out there playing checkers and they should be playing chess because the offensive coordinator is Jim Bob Cooter.
Yeah, let me talk about the coaching staff real fast. So Steichen breaks in with the Chargers under Norv Turner. He basically, when they fire Norv, he tries to leave for a year and then he comes back under Mike McCoy and then eventually sticks under Anthony Lynn as well. But he crosses paths with Frank Wright and Nick Sirianni, and then that Sirianni connection actually leads him to Philadelphia, where he becomes Philly's OC. He was also the Chargers OC at one point, but he becomes Philly's OC, and he's one of the key guys in really unlocking Jalen Hurts. He was the guy who gets a lot of credit for helping Hurts kind of get over the hurdle from what he was in college to what he is now in the NFL. And so that's where he kind of gets his claim to fame. Jim Bob Cooter, he runs across in Philadelphia in 2021 when Jim Bob is a consultant with them, with the Eagles, and they form a bond and they become a pair over here in Indianapolis. So it's a West Coast scheme in a lot in a lot of its base, but what they've done with Anthony Richardson is they've tried to go back to some more they've leaned a little bit heavier on what they did with some of the stuff they did with Hurts, which is zone reads, power runs, stuff like that. And they weren't doing it as much with Richardson earlier, but now they're hitting it hard and heavy here and trying to really lean on the like things the zone reads and in the power runs. Zone read, for people who aren't familiar with the term, a zone read is essentially the quarterback, gets a snap, he puts the ball into the pocket of the running back as if he's going to hand the ball off. But before he makes the handoff, he is keying on a defender. He's looking at a defender and looking at where the defender is in proximity to where the running back is going versus where the quarterback might be going. And if the running back or if the defender stays in one area, he could hand the ball off to the running back. And then if the defender goes in the other area, he pulls the back ball out, keeps it as a quarterback, and then runs the ball as well. So you're basically reading the player, the defender, and then making your play call off of it. In either the play goes in one direction with the back or the other direction with the quarterback. And so that's what a zone read is. You're essentially making your decision on what the play is going to do based on what the defender, a specific defender in front of you, is doing. So they're using that more. They also have an RPO version of that, which is essentially a zone read, but it's instead of just if the quarterback pulls the ball, he doesn't automatically run. He might actually throw the ball. So that adds another passing element into that as well. So you've got power runs, which is just he just straight runs to a spot, just as if he was the running back, and then the running back becomes an extra blocker. So that's why it's called power, because it's getting adding an extra blocker in. So you're going to see these run concepts, these quarterback run concepts with the Colts that you don't normally see with a lot of other teams, and you'll see it a lot in college. But RPO, PRO, zone reads, these are all used in the Colts scheme. And so this movement that they're trying to create with Richardson is designed to give him confidence to move off his spot. They will specifically roll the line out to try and get him on the move and have him throw on the move just so that you can't straight blitz him. And the reason they do that is he is terrible at picking up the blitz. The offensive line is terrible at ascertaining where the blitz is coming from, and the running backs cannot pick the blitz up. So they are a disaster when you blitz, which is why I expect Aaron Glenn to blitz. He that's part of his game plan. It's what he does best, and the Colts are really bad at picking it up. The against the Jets, they blitzed a Mike right up the A gap, and the Colts line parted to get the guys that they that they were designed to block on the play. Linebacker runs straight down the pipe, and Richardson's staring right past him, looking for a receiver, and it's like he didn't even see him. Guy came in, just totally tattooed him. Didn't even see it. Like didn't even see it coming. Like, I don't know how he didn't see it coming. It was amazing. But he just isn't picking it up. And it's always been kind of one of the negatives with him. So they're trying to incorporate these things in order to give give Anthony Richardson more confidence to try and play to his strengths a little bit more. Because he's got a legitimate arm. Like he can throw the ball all over the field. In the past, he hasn't thrown the ball short. But in this new style that they have, he does throw it short. He still attacks the middle more than he attacks the outside. He's still not real good at putting the outside, but he likes to take shots at the deep ball. Problem is he can be tricked because he's a young quarterback, and so you can fool him into throwing deep when he really shouldn't, and those can lead to turnovers as well. So there's a lot of this big shifts, and it mostly centers around the running game. They've really become more run focused. I believe last week they ran more running plays than passing plays because they're trying to use that run to get their rhythm. So the issue is here is that with this heavy focus on the run game, they ran the ball 35 times. They only gained 91 yards on 35
That's
carries.
sticking to it.
Yes. That's not, but the results are not great. But they absolutely stuck to it because the sticking to it allows them to get the rhythm to work the passing game a little bit more effectively. The 91 yards that they were able to achieve was against the Jets. But this is not your daddy's Jets. This is not the Jets from a couple years ago. The Jets are one of the worst run defenses in the league. They on average, they give up 130 yards a game, which is 22nd in the NFL, and they're 24th in DVOA in run defense. Yet the Colts only put up 91 on this team. That's one in the bottom third of the league. As you just mentioned, the Lions are number 5 in DVOA. They're only giving up 94. 0.8 yards a rush a game. That's 5th in the NFL. And over the last two games, they've only given up 41 yards to the Jaguars and 56 yards to the Texans. And so the Lions' run defense is on a roll. So the Colts' game plan is going has been and is presumably going to continue to be about trying to establish the run. The Lions are going to counter that by trying to defend the run as much as they can. And then after they defend the run, it'll carry over into then worrying about the quarterback. When it comes to defending the quarterback, you can if you blitz him, it rattles him and it causes problems. But they are going to have to be incredibly disciplined in their run defense in order to stop what the Colts want to do, especially with the zone reads and the RPOs and stuff like that. But if the Lions can be disciplined like they have been, especially of late, that's going to offset one of the main things the Colts want to do. So if you stop the run, you put them in tougher situations to make the pass, and then you're asking a young quarterback who has been struggling with passes to now have to handle a blitz and locate passes and try and fit passes into small windows because they really only have one wide receiver who can actually separate. All the rest of them are basically more possession receivers who don't get separation and they make windows tougher to throw into for him. So he's going to have his work cut out for him. He looks dangerous. If he can get loose, he's a huge man. Richardson is, and he can run, he can hit, he's got power to his game. If he gets in the open, he's a problem. But if you can contain him and pressure him, that's a huge gonna be a huge favor for it's gonna be a huge advantage for the Lions.
Does Steichen call the plays or does Jim Bob Cooter call the plays?
Steichen has called the
Oh,
plays. Yeah, he
so
called the
they stand a
plays.
chance.
Yeah.
Because if it was Jim Bob Cooter, it's like, oh, they don't stand a chance.
Yeah, 100%. I'm 100% with you. Yeah, Steichen called the plays in Philly when he was there, and he's just continued to call the plays here with the Colts as well. And he's good. Like he did a lot of those zone reads and stuff with in Philly, so he's not unfamiliar. What's interesting to me is that Lions coach Scotty Montgomery is well known in the coaching community as being an RPO guru. Like he's really good at it. Like he really understands how to run RPOs like unbelievably well. And it's like what he's known for outside of like, you
Kind
know,
of it on the wrong team.
well, but here's the deal. Like, okay, so he coached at Maryland, ran RPOs. When he coached at the other, I forget where he was the head coach in college, he ran RPOs. When he was with the Colts as the running back, he helped them introduce RPOs with Carson Wentz. Like he knows his RPOs. Yes, they don't use RPOs with Jared Goff, but he knows them extremely well. I 100% expect that he has been in the defensive locker room a lot this or the defensive coaching room this week saying, this is what they're going to do. This is how you defend it. You know what I mean? And I think Scotty Montgomery could be the X factor in helping this defense stop Anthony Richardson this week.
All right, we talked about the quarterbacks there. Anthony Richardson, by the way, putting up old school stats, only 48.5% completion percentage, 5 TDs, 7 picks,
Yeah.
15.6 yards per completion, which leads the NFL. It's very, very early 1980s, 1970s type stats for a quarterback. Just worth mentioning. All right, running backs. Jonathan Taylor.
Do you want to talk about this, like what happened here for the people who don't know, or like, I don't know, like where
About
he,
between Flacco and him?
yeah, like how
I'll just
he
go
ends up.
real quick.
Yeah, it's real simple. Like basically Richardson was running and running and running, and then he got tired. And when he got tired, he didn't think he could do he didn't think he could run the next play. So he tapped his helmet and pulled himself out of the game. And when he pulled himself out of the game, Flacco came in cold, had to hand it off because he wasn't ready to throw. And they end up getting stopped on their drive stalls, and then they have to kick a field goal. Eventually they lose by a point or two or something like that, or three maybe, but they lose by a small margin. And so after the game, he reveals, yeah, I was just tired. I wasn't hurt. And then it becomes a, oh no, the lock. Now, you know, how much does the locker room trust him? What's his maturity level? And so they decide we're going to bench him for the rest of the season and let him learn because his head is obviously not in the right spot. Everybody's tired out there. You have to buck up and do it. And you didn't, and you pulled yourself out and you kind of bailed on your team. And so they didn't like that. So they said, we're turning to Joe Flacco, all 39-year-old Joe Flacco. And then Joe Flacco goes out and absolutely is garbage. Just like, I mean, just terrible. They get destroyed 2 games. And so now they're like, okay, Anthony, I hope you learned your lesson because you're going back in. You know what I mean? But to their credit, they adjusted. They adjusted the scheme to try and help him out. They said that he's been more mature over the break. He took the benching well, and he came back and he beat the terrible Jets. And so, we'll see. We'll see how he handles it because Indy's really going to be watching this. You know, they're really going to have high hopes that he can do well. And it'll be interesting because there's only one game of film on this new style that they have. And if they go back to the old style that didn't work before, I don't know why they would think it would work again. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens because they kind of bailed on him, and I don't think you can bail on him again. So they kind of have to stick with it, which is and what they presented was a run heavy outlet to give him more time and confidence. And so I fully expect them to do that again. And I think they're going to play right into what Detroit does well.
Running backs, Jonathan Taylor, Trey Sermon, and Tyler Goodson.
Jonathan Taylor has been a great running back since he entered the league, but he is not having a good year. The offensive line certainly isn't helping him, but he's not playing up to his per, you know, what he's capable of. Low production, low yards per run, doesn't quite look like the back that he has looked like in the past. He's contributed in the pass game, contributed as a runner. Like the talent's there. It just hasn't been prevalent this season. They lean on him like 80, 90% of snaps as well. So he's in the game almost all the time. When they go to Goodson, it's really only for like a breather. And then Sermon is like a passing situation only back. He only gets used a handful of snaps a game.
Wide receiver group is Michael Pittman, Josh Downs, and Alec Pierce, with Adonai Mitchell, Ashton Doolin, and Anthony Gould.
On paper, it looks pretty good. Their first four are all average, maybe even above average. Like with Josh Downs, I think he's an above average wide receiver. But again, if they're not getting them the ball, they're not producing at their full capabilities. Alex Pierce is their deep threat. Michael
Very,
Pitt.
very Jameson Williams-like numbers on Alec Pierce.
Yeah, very. I mean, like they'll throw two, three, four shots at him a game, and if he catches one, great, they're happy. Michael Pittman was signed to be their wide receiver one.
Yeah, an
He does,
emerging star at one point.
yeah, and he just has not lived up to that billing to the point that then they drafted Adonai Mitchell in the second round to kind of be maybe their next wide receiver one. But he's wide receiver four right now. Josh Downs is, I think, their best receiver. He's their slot guy, undersized, very quick, gets open all the time. And because he goes over the middle, he tends to be Anthony Richardson's favorite target because that's where Anthony Richardson likes to throw. So guarding Josh Downs is going to be, outside of stopping the run, guarding Josh Downs is going to be the biggest task that the Lions have.
Yeah, as far as wide receiver groups, this is middle of the pack as the Lions have faced throughout the year. All right. Tight ends. Mo Alie-Cox is a starter with Kylan Granson, Drew Ogletree, and Will Mallory.
They're blockers with minimal pass catching ability. Mo Alie-Cox is the starter, but he only plays about 40% of snaps. Ogletree finds the field about 35% of snaps. Granson finds the field about 35% of snaps. They all kind of have specific things that they do, and none of them is like a full-time guy. They kind of all just rotate through. They will run 20, I'm sorry, 12 personnel around 22% of the time. So they'll have two of these tight ends on the field quite a bit. And again, most of it is because of a blocking reasons. So it's something to pay attention to when they load up. But again, for a team like the Lions that is comfortable running out of their base 4-3, I don't think it's going to bother them much at all. To sit out there with three linebackers on the field. Oh, one thing I meant to mention, and I forgot. If I dip back to receivers for a second, Doolin, number 16. That's the keep that number in mind. He only plays like I don't know, like 12 to 15 snaps a game. Okay. But I noticed when they were running power with Anthony Richardson, he would find himself on the field when they would run power left. Okay. So they ran, Anthony Richardson ran the ball 10 times against the Jets. Three of them were zone reads where he kept the read and ran himself. Seven of them were power runs. Three of them went left. On all three of them, Doolin was, he would pinch in and then be the lead blocker. And that's where they scored two of their rushing touchdowns, was running left behind Doolin. So if you see 16 on your screen and you see him pinch in tight to the line, that might be power left, because they showed that three times last game. So, and like I said, got two touchdowns out of it. So keep an eye on 16, and hopefully the Lions saw that as well.
Offensive line wise, left to right, Bernard Raimann, Quentin Nelson, Tanner Bordellini, Dalton Tucker, and Braden Smith.
So Ryman has not practiced this week, and he is there. The rumors are they're expecting him to miss. If he misses, they will turn to Matt Gonclaves. Gonclaves is a rookie. Tanner Bortolini is a rookie. Tucker is a rookie. So they will potentially start three rookie offensive linemen against the Lions defensive front. That's a big problem potentially for them. Will Freeze, the normal right guard, is on IR. Ryan Kelly, the normal center, is on IR. And so that leaves them with just, and then with Ryman injured, that leaves them with just Nelson, their left guard, and Braden Smith, their right guard, right tackle, as the only two originally starting offensive linemen. Quentin Nelson's great. I think we all know
Yeah.
that. Smith is a little bit suspect. You can beat him with speed. And so it'll be interesting to see what kind of rushers they put on Smith. Will they put a James Houston on Smith? If you see James Houston line up over the right tackle, maybe James Houston is productive because he doesn't deal with James Houston types very well. If they put Pascal over him, he's going to have a better chance. But really, the only offensive lineman that is at all scary is Quentin Nelson, their left guard. Everyone else is a rookie, an injury replacement, or someone who's just playing average to below average. They're dealing, the injuries that they're dealing with have really caused them problems. It's part of the reason why they're not picking the blitz up properly, is because you're dealing with a makeshift offensive line, and it's part of the reason why they're not producing on the ground with some of their runs. Yeah, they're not getting that push that they necessarily want to. What's interesting about the offensive line is that they will use them to pull, and sometimes they will pull their guards and then run behind them. But a lot, I mean, and I mean a lot, they will pull their guards in the opposite direction of the run to create some eye candy to try and fool the linebackers of the direction of the run. I want to say when they pulled their linemen against the Jets, they ran the opposite direction more than they ran in the direction of the pulling guard. So again, Lions linebackers are going to have to like stay disciplined, hold their gaps, and then be able to pursue. And you're going to need your safeties to be able to come downhill when the misdirection goes the other way.
All right, that's it for the Colt offense. Flipping over to the Colt defensive side of the ball, led by Gus Bradley as the defensive coordinator. Down on the defensive line, we have Kwity Paye, the former University of Michigan star, right?
Yes.
DeForest Buckner, Grover Stewart, Ndayo, Oda Yingbo.
Yeah, that's a hard one. Deo.
Off the bench, Laiatu Latu, Taven Bryan, Raekwon Davis, Isaiah Land, Jannard Avery, and then another West African name, Adetomiwa,
Adebawari.
Adebaware. Yeah, Adebaware is easier one. Yeah.
Okay, so this scheme, I mentioned it changed. If you know much about Gus Bradley, he's been around for a long time. He's most well known for being the architect of the Legion of Boom in Seattle, the Cover 3 Legion of Boom that he ran on, in Seattle. What is what helped him get his job as the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. And then when he shifted off that, he went back to coaching defenses, just coaching defenses. He's like, okay, I'm just going to be a defensive coordinator from now on. And spent some time with the Chargers, which is where he ended up running crossing paths with Steichen. When Steichen was the offensive coordinator of the Chargers, Gus Bradley was the defensive coordinator of the Chargers. And then they live in the same circles as Frank Reich. When Frank Reich gets the job with the Colts, he hires Gus Bradley. Then when Frank Reich leaves and Steichen takes over, Steichen keeps Gus Bradley on the team, and that's how these guys end up working together. Gus Bradley is the guy who taught Robert Saleh the Cover 3, which then is what we now see in San Francisco because of Gus Bradley. It's what we, and then Jeff Hafley, who went through Saleh in San Francisco and now runs the Packers defense. D'Amico Ryans, who went through San Francisco and is now in Houston. All of these guys kind of get their defenses based off of the Cover 3 that Bradley, these Cover 3 concepts that Bradley helped create back in the Seattle time. He ran a lot of Cover 3, started the season out running Cover 3, and they were just getting gashed. Like he didn't have the horses to run the Cover 3 that he wanted to. The Jaguars, like I said, put up like 37 points on him, and then Bradley shifts. He says like, okay, I'm going to shift back into a more natural style of defense that most NFL teams are shifting to now, and that's going to be more Cover 2 and quarters, so Cover 4. Where you're using your two safeties high and you drop your corners into zone coverages as well. And then I'm going to blitz my linebackers more. And that's been kind of a recipe for success. That's that they've had more success in this style of defense. He'll still run Cover 3 because that's in his nature. Especially run early downs. He'll drop a safety into the box for run defense. So they do two things on early downs that the Lions need to be conscious of. They basically anticipate that the offense they're playing against is going to run on first down. So they will either put out a 4-3, which is, you know, with your standard four man front with the three linebackers, or they'll run a 4-2, but it'll be a Cover 3 and they'll drop the safety into the box to work like a linebacker. Essentially, both ways they're trying to get seven guys into the box, plus if they can, you know, scrunch some other guys up as well, because they're trying to play the run. This is a defense that Jared Goff has beat. This style is a defense that Jared Goff has beat all season. And so they're going to run zone like 80% of the time. Jared Goff has been pretty good against zone this year. So again, they're going to try and blitz, but Jared Goff's really good against the blitz. He's best quarterback in the league against the blitz right now. They're going to drop into zones. Jared Goff's been good about beating those zones. And so this defense that they've shifted to is working well for them, but it also is exactly the type of defense that Jared Goff is beating. Whereas before that Houston game, that Packers game, those are the games where Goff maybe wasn't at his sharpest. And those were the Cover 3. And so will Bradley bring back more Cover 3 for this game to try and, you know, counter Jared Goff? I don't think he will. And again, because I think they shifted and they've got a new defense and they're trying to stick with what's working with their defense. And so I expect them to still run a lot of Cover 2 and quarters, stick with that 80% of the time to be in zone. And just do what they've been doing and kind of do a bend don't break style of defense and just hope that Goff makes a mistake. And as we've seen before, Goff doesn't make a lot of mistakes when you give him time. And so the whole surrounding of the Lions' offensive success is going to revolve around, can the Lions handle the Colts' defensive front? So back to where we started. Kwity Paye, decent defensive end. Latu, I think, is a really good defensive end. Deyu, I don't know how to pronounce his last name. He's your other starting defensive end, him and Paye. But they rotate Latu in. Basically, if you look at like their snap distribution, they all play about 70% of snaps, right? So they're rotating those three guys through two spots the majority of the time. Isaiah Land is the backup, like the edge four, doesn't get a lot of run. It's not very good right now either. But the first three are good. Latu, I think, is the best one. And even though he's technically not a starter, he gets starter level snaps. Their strength, though, is in the middle. Grover Stewart and Buckner are two very good defensive ends. I'm sorry, defensive tackles. And they play at a really good level. They're good at stopping the run. They're good at playing the pass. And they can put some pressure on you, too. They're going to be a little bit harder to handle. The weakness here, though, is they're not elite in rushing the passer. Like I said, they're middle of the road in production. Their pressures are 14th in the NFL. Their pat pressure rate is 18th in the NFL. Their sacks are 18th in the NFL. They don't blitz a whole lot. They rely on their front four. I think they blitz only like 20% of the time on average, but they have been blitzing more of late. And again, if you do that against Jared Goff, though, he's the best quarterback in the league against the blitz. So I really think beating these front four is going to be the key. The weakness here is that they run kind of like a wide nine, right? So you got your two stout guys in the middle, and then you got Paye and Deyu or Latu. They're out at that wide nine spot. So when you have these wide nines, they're good because they cover a lot of ground laterally, but they have weaknesses up the middle. And so a team that runs like duo blocks or gap blocks, like the Lions do, they can have success here. And if you can trick the linebackers, if you can get offensive line up to the second level against linebackers, it doesn't take much to knock these guys off their spots, and then you can create gashes, right? So that's the key for the Lions. It's going to be, can you out-muscle this defensive line? And if you don't want them to fire off and you don't want them to pass rush, well, you got to establish the run. And the way you establish the run is you just try and bully them up front. And with as good as they are on the interior, I think you're going to see duo blocks where you're going to double those interior guys and then shed to the second level, or you're going to see gap blocks where you're going to pull the guard and then run them up into a gap to try and get those guys into the linebacker, or you're going to run Panay like as we they do seemingly every week. But there's lots of running should be on the call sheet for Ben Johnson this week, because if you can establish the run against these guys, it all opens up in the secondary after that. So priority one, run. And like I said, the scheme that the Lions run, it's built to beat this type of front.
Linebackers, EJ Speed and Zaire Franklin, when they're in the two linebacker look. If they go to three, you could see Sagan Olubi, Grant Stewart, Cameron McGrone, Liam Anderson.
It's normally Grant Stewart. Now, Stewart is a special teams ace, and that's really all he is. But they will use him on first downs when they go into a base 4-3. Other than that, it's Speed and Franklin pretty much the whole time. Stewart really just does what he does on linebacker on special teams plays. At the snap, he runs downhill and tries to hit somebody. And that's really what he does. Like they basically are like, we're expecting this to be a run, so go run down the field and try and get the ball. And if it's not a run, then try and get the quarterback. And that's basically what his job is. The Speed and Franklin are the guys that you have to be more knowledgeable of, and they're going to be like I said, on the field the whole time. Franklin, I think, is a really good linebacker. Speed is a little, he's average to below, and I'm not overly concerned with their ability to stop the run. Like I said, they're decent. Franklin's actually, I think, really good at stopping the run. Speed, not as much. But if you can gap them, or you can just run the duo, you can get to these linebackers, and you can knock them off their spots, and you can open up opportunities for big runs. They average, they give up like 3.2 yards after contact, which is fifth most in the NFL. So
It's good for David Montgomery.
it is. And at the same time, if they don't, like, this is one of those games where I could see Montgomery run it 20 times and just, get up, and he can end up with like 100 yards. You know what I mean? And he's just powering these guys down the field. And then Jahmyr Gibbs runs it like 8 times, and he also has 100 yards because when he gets in the open, he's just like, you can't touch him, right?
Right.
So I can see both backs doing well. But yeah, certainly feels like Montgomery and Gibbs should be the feature players in this game plan.
Defensive secondary first with the corners. Got Jalen Jones, Kenny Moore the second, Samuel Womack the third, Chris Lammons, and the other David Long coming off the bench.
Again, they try and play these guys as much as possible. Jalen Jones is a bit underrated, in my opinion. Womack's having a good year, so those are outside corners. Kenny Moore is their star. He's arguably the best pure cover corner in the slot in the NFL. He's their playmaker. He's going to end up on Amon-Ra quite a bit, which means that you may want to be, cautious when you're targeting Amon-Ra. At the same time, the amount of zone that they run, you can run Amon-Ra open, and you can force Kenny Moore into guarding a back or a tight end. And so you can manipulate ways to get Amon-Ra where he's not being covered by Kenny Moore. And if that happens, Amon-Ra have a chance to eat, because Amon-Ra tends to be, excuse me, Jared Goff's favorite target when going against zones. The trick will be, can they get him away from Kenny Moore? Because, like I said, Kenny Moore is really just a sensational corner, slot corner.
All right, the safeties are Nick Cross and Julian Blackman. The reserves being Ronnie Harrison Jr., Rodney Thomas II, and Darren Hall.
So Nick Cross is the guy that they will, like I said, when they go to cover three and they drop a safety into the box, that's Nick Cross. Cross is, if you remember, he was drafted, I think, two picks after Kirby. So he's, he's talented. He's a guy that I actually liked. I thought he would have fit well in Detroit's system. Really good at stopping the run, which is why they tend to block, to drop him. It's just a matter of, if you're running the ball and running the ball, you're going to see a lot of Nick Cross, which is why you're going to have to also, you can't just run the ball every time. You're going to have to then test them deep. You're going to have to try and stress their zones, because you're going to want them to have to adjust back to like cover two, and keep that cover two in place. And so that you keep Nick Cross, back in the safety area instead of like in the box. So I do like Nick Cross quite a bit. Julian Blackman is good. I think he's another talented safety. He's more of a roamer, but he can make plays. I'm not really scared of either of them. But it's a talented secondary. At the same time, if you look at them statistically, they're again in the bottom third of the league in most passing statistical categories. So some of that is because they focus their linebackers on stopping the run so much that teams will then just hit underneath, and then they gain yak. The Colts have allowed the seventh most yak yards in the league, and they allow the eighth most yak yards over expectations. So, like, when they should have stopped them, they didn't, and then the offense got more yardage out of it. And so, again, they're in the bottom third of the league when it comes to a passing statistic. So if you're allowing yards after contact on the, against a run, if you're allowing yak yards, and if you're it adds up to, you know, total yards, which is why they're in the bottom third of the league in total yards as well. Another thing that they're near the bottom of the league is time of possession. And the reason is because teams will hold the ball a really long time because this is a bend don't break defense. They don't mind allowing you to get some passes underneath. They don't mind allowing you to run the ball. And but unfortunately, they don't always make their stops. And when they don't make their stops, their opponents get extended drives. Extended drives leads to time of possession. Time of possession leads to points. And that's why they end up losing a lot of these games. So, not a bad team. Tough to find their, they're not really finding their identity. They kind of have something that works for them now. But again, like on offense, the thing that's working for them now is the thing that the Lions are good at beating. So, I'm expecting the same trio that's been killing it for the last however many weeks. Montgomery, Gibbs, and St. Brown to all have good days. Like I said, the caveat here is you got to keep Amon-Ra away from Kenny Moore as much as possible.
All right, that's it for the defense. Going to the special teams. The kicker is Matt Gay. The punter is Rigoberto Sanchez. Matt Gay was the kicker of the 2021 Rams that won the Super Bowl. He's hit 19 to 22 field goals on the season long of 56. I don't know, not a super dangerous kicker, but
I didn't follow.
steady.
Yeah, I didn't follow there. I don't think he's the guy that started the season with them. I don't. I thought I
They have
had
another
noted that
guy
somewhere.
named Schrader or something,
Okay. Okay.
but he only played one game.
Oh, okay.
Spencer Schrader.
I thought I remembered them not starting the year with him. So, okay.
Yeah, we've had 10 games with he played. Schrader played the. Oh, Schrader's been back around the last couple of
Okay.
weeks. He must be as the kickoff specialist. No, against the Jets. Sorry, against the Jets. Why is it? Oh, he was on a different team. All right, he's
Oh,
already
okay.
gone. All right,
Okay.
that's it. I was like, oh, this doesn't make. He's with the. Oh yeah, because he's replaced Harrison Butker in Kansas City. All right,
There
that's
you
what's going
go.
on.
There you
All right, I
go.
was like, yeah, I
There
thought I read this, and he was already. All right, yeah.
you go.
So yeah, Gay's the kicker. Rigoberto Sanchez is the punter. He's been the Colts punter for the last, except for a year, he was out torn Achilles. He's been the Colts punter for the last 8 years. His numbers have gotten better as every year goes along. But I don't know, still not a bit more or less an average punter.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to say about him.
Return men, they do get good yardage on kick returns on average, around 30 yards per kick return. But that's split between Tyler Goodson, Anthony Gould, and Ashton Doolin. All three of them have seen returns. And punt returner, though, Josh Downs, who's pretty good. Long of only 23, but he is averaging 11 yards per return, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, he's not scared to try and take it back, like, or you know, try and take it out, right? Like he's not just gonna fair catch everything. He's pretty electric. So, yeah, I think you know it. His marks are average, but I think he's scary enough that you don't want to give him too many chances.
Luke Rhodes is the long snapper.
Like Sanchez, he's been with this team for 8
8
years.
years. Yep,
Yeah.
he's Rigoberto Sanchez's personal snapper.
Played college at William and Mary. I remember that because of Colby Sozzle. Whenever William and Mary stick out. But that's about it. He's pretty much been with them since he was a rookie, and I don't have anything else more on him, unfortunately. He's just kind of he's been their long snapper for 8 years, and so it's notable, I guess.
All right. That's it. All right. Let's talk about who's going to win the game. You
Okay.
got the win last week because I had the Lions a little closer than you did.
Yeah, I didn't. Okay, so
Think so, anyways.
yeah, no, I think yeah, because you had a higher. Yeah, I won. I didn't do the math, but we both had the same Lions score, and I was closer on the Titans or on the Jaguars score than you were. So I did get the win, Joe. You're getting to a point where you're gonna have to start making some moves, buddy.
Yeah.
I've got a 4-game lead on you now, bud, and with only 7 left, so you're gonna have to start putting me in uncomfortable positions and shortchanging me here, and playing the $1 card or every once, the $1 wager every once in a while. Yeah, you know what? I'm not. I think this Colts team is a team that has the potential to be good. I also don't think they are anything more than average. They are trying to find themselves, and that works well when you're playing a Jets team that's won 3 games on the season. It's not going to play as well against the Lions. I think the Lions have advantages all over the field in this game. The Colts will fight and they'll make it tough, and if you take them too lightly, they have the potential to, disrupt what you want to do. Their defensive interior line is good. Their quarterback is a quarterback that the style of quarterback that notoriously gives you problems. Like, for example, with the amount of man that the Lions run, if they have their back turned to Anthony Richardson and he escapes the pocket and he starts to run, like, they're going to have to then turn, locate him, and then chase him down, and he could get some yardage. So I do think Richardson's the type of guy that I have to be, that's historically been problematic for the Lions. So you have to be conscious of that. At the same time, I think he's full of errors, and the Lions have the talent and the game plan and the style of defense to expose him and expose some of those errors. So it's a tough one because they keep the games close, right? Like I said earlier, 10 of their 11 games are one score games. Whether they're winning or losing, they've been one score games. So I kind of want to pick this game to be a little bit tighter. At the same time, I could see the Lions just roll them as well. I'm going to go. Give me 1 second here. I just want to double check something. I'm going to stick with 31 because that's what we've been sticking with, right? I think they can hit they're averaging close to
Oh, they can
31 or
hit.
something like
It's
that.
like they can hit 31. They
Yeah,
can hit
they've been
52.
yeah. I'm going to stick with 31. And as much as I want to say that they can keep this a one score game, I really don't think they can. So I'm gonna re-pick the same score. No.
Last week.
Yeah. I'm gonna pick the same score from last week. I'm gonna go 31-13.
All right.
I
Wow, you're making it.
do think I could be a little bit overestimating my Lions' confidence, but
No, I don't think you are.
okay.
And you just made it more difficult on me.
Okay. Good.
Well,
That's what
because
I want.
I was settled, like, all right, no matter what you say, I'm gonna have the Lions winning by more points because it only makes sense. Gonna fall behind, but you have them winning by 18 points, the Lions 7.5. So, Vegas might be up to something here. Also, this is like they have to be looking to head to Thanksgiving because that's the next revenge
Sure,
chapter, right?
sure,
This
sure.
game is really meaningless to them. You want to
Yes.
win every game, but like this game's an AFC. They're play. This is an AFC game. They have a lead in the division, but they don't want to lose it, obviously. Don't get me wrong with that, but like this is a game that they can really slough off it, but it's hard to believe they're going to slough off it all with the way
Yeah.
they've been playing. It's
Correct.
but if there is a time they're looking forward to Thursday, this would be it, where they kind of play a lackluster game. Ugh. But like you said, like they can't, the Colts are going to have trouble stopping the Lions running. All right. And you said, I'm going to have to make some moves. 33 to 10 Lions.
Ooh. All
Yeah.
right.
Yeah. Now they're going to squeeze. They're going to win 17 to 16. Confuse everybody.
I do think the Colts have a chance to score like two touchdowns, but I also don't think they will. I think they
They
have a
could. I mean,
chance.
yeah,
Yeah.
Anthony Richardson is a wild card. Like he could end up having a great game. They could have trouble stopping him, and like
Yep.
he's capable. This young guy, nobody really knows what he's got. He could have a big game. That's like one of the things that the Colts could have going in their favor on Sunday. It's just he just plays a great game out of nowhere. He puts it all together, and the Lions are guessing. Like are they going to run? Where he's runs for 18 yards on this play, and then he starts moving out of the pocket, and the Lions like kind of creep up, and then he throws like a 30-yard pat, one of those type of games. But I don't know. The
You
Lions are
want
playing so well. No, I'm sticking with what I got. No, I
to
already said it. I'm not going to go back. But if there's a game where things can get a little wacky, it would be this one that doesn't have as much meaning to what they're trying to do.
Yeah, it does like. I think a lot of people were looking at the Jaguars as a trap game.
Right, because there was another one just like it. Like they didn't need to
Right.
win that game. And the Jaguars were bad, and they could have sloughed off, but they didn't.
Right. And I think that's why I'm looking at this as they're going to go in and take care of business and just it's not it could be
It's not a
close. I
long
just don't think
trip.
it's yeah,
It's a
no.
short flight. Like it's not like
Yeah.
they're going to be worn down or anything.
It was Chris Long on Chris Long's podcast said that the Lions have the perfect attitude for facing teams where they just don't care. Like it's not that they it's nothing personal, they just don't like anybody. They just want everyone to be they just don't care. And when you listen to them talk in the locker room, the same kind of message is being applied. Carlton Davis was asked, "Are you guys running up the score?" And Carlton Davis says, "You don't want to be embarrassed? Play better."
Right.
Like,
Yeah, everybody's getting
and
paid out there. That's how I feel about the NFL. Run up the score on everybody.
yeah. And Kirby, it's the same kind of thing. We're not running up the score. Like, this is just come play us harder. Don't quit. Wait, because we're not going to quit. And they play snap to snap and they try and snatch your soul. Like,
And
I
they weren't
really.
even around for this stuff, but as Lions fans, like we've been crushed a ton of times.
Yes. Yes.
Like,
I have zero sympathy for
right.
anybody. And I thoroughly enjoy that the Packers enjoy wh are whining about it as well. But yeah, they just that they don't really care what this what they're gonna do to you. Like they just want to come out and they want to be physical and they want to beat you up. And then while all these teams that we've talked about going through, like the Lions hangover and stuff like that, because they get beat up so bad that they aren't recovered the next week, the Lions may have found the secret sauce in the fact that they're now doing walkthroughs on Wednesday to allow their guys to have an extra day to recover and then refocus them on Thursdays and then be And then they're experienced enough with the scheme. They've been around long enough. They're mature enough that they can then refocus on Thursday and Friday, and that's all they need to go in and then just be physical again the next week. And so, Lions, I would not be surprised if they just keep doing walkthrough Wednesday from now on, because again, they don't care about this opponent in front of them as much as they care about the opponent 8 weeks from now. And that's they're trying to save their bodies for the playoff, for a playoff run. They're making decisions now that with the impact being 8 weeks from now. And so it's all just that's really where their attention is.
I could see him going back to getting rid of the like it makes sense now, right in the meaty part of the middle of the season, but they could probably get back to more hitting late in the season. So they're like battle tested, I guess, for the playoffs. I do like
Well,
the idea. Like they don't need it right now. They're getting beat up enough.
yeah, they are doing some like hitting on Thursdays though, which is I think why we're seeing some injuries come out on Thursdays in the past couple of weeks. But yeah, I'm with you. And if they get if they end up getting the one seed and they end up getting the bye, like that's just going to help them and they can be it's a unique approach that even a year ago they wouldn't have been able to take like a Wednesday and make a Wednesday a light day and just like a learning day. Like they couldn't have done that last year. This year your core is older, you've been established more, you've maintained your coordinators, you've maintained your core players, and like everybody knows what the business is. Everybody knows where the focus is. And they've got one eye on their opponent and one eye on the future. And that's how they're making decisions. And it's working. Boy, is it working.
All right, ratings, reviews, movement first. We got a review for MJB47NYC. It's a nice long review. It's a great review, 5 stars. The only negative thing you could say about the podcast, we're only on once a week, so that's very nice. And then we have a rewritten review by
Nice.
Tio Chino that it says, sorry, like that we're misunderstanding. I don't think we misunderstood. We knew. Tio Chino, we know you were happy with the podcast. We just like being negative sometimes. It wasn't as bad as it seemed. He's like, misunderstood me. I would never say anything big thing bad about you or the machine. Everybody knows you're the man. Great job. Keep the machine going. Appreciate your guys. Has been a Lions fan for at least 50 years. Anyways, you get this old, you forget things. Remember, it was Bubba Baker's rookie year when I really started enjoying our Lions. First started
Ooh.
listening to this great podcast in the mountains of Zunyi Guizhou, China, maybe 4 or
Whoa.
5 years ago, and he forgets. But I will never forget the big time blessing you guys were and continue to be. Thank you. Again, thank you,
Wow.
Joe and Eric with a K. See, that's very nice. Like, we did not mean anything bad in this review. Sometimes we like having some fun. So, Tio Chino, we appreciate the updated 5-star review.
That's great. Yeah, we can be self-deprecating at
No.
times. But no, I tell you, the positive interactions I've had of late have been fantastic. And you know, I'm sure the winning helps, but I'm starting to get very confident with where this team is going. And you know, I'm still doing the same job every week, same breaking down teams the same way, but like I'm seeing more ways for the Lions to win because that's what they're showing me. You know what I mean? Like what they're showing me on their game film is we can beat you this way, we can beat you this way. And so now I look at these opponents and I'm like, geez, I don't know how you handle all of it. And I mean, that's part of why they're winning, right? And it's great. And so I've been getting a little bit cocky and I've been a little bit I've been a
Strutting your
little
stuff.
yeah oh yeah yeah I've been very very strutty recently and I think people like that too, so that's fun. Yeah, it's cool stuff. I really enjoy all the fan interactions that I've had recently, it's nice to hear. And I keep meeting, it's amazing. Like, I just keep meeting new people, you know. Like, I think, it doesn't register to me that how many people like actually listen to the two of us talk, because I feel like it's just like the two of us talking.
Sure. Yeah, at times it does seem like that. Like, who are we even talking to?
Right, exactly. Like, I'm just recording this so that I can replay it for myself later. And I forget that, like, there's a lot of people that appreciate that. And so we appreciate everyone that that reciprocates that back onto us. That's super super
It's
helpful.
awesome. Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's it. You know, we've got a big one coming this Sunday. You're going to hear from us pretty soon, coming back around for the Bears on Thanksgiving Day. So, do you have anything left to say?
No, it's going to be a tight week next week. So we'll do the
Right.
podcast a little early, and then we'll have a little bit more time. But it's a 3 games in 18 days or something like that. So it's going to be a tight schedule next couple weeks.
Yep. So that's it for us this week. So until next time, let's go Lions.